everybody, and welcome to Roll for Podcast, our Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition talk show podcast in which we talk about D&D things for your pleasure. This is an encounter roleplay podcast. My name is Will, and today I have with me a wonderful cast joining me to talk about these topics today. So I have with me Bubbanaut CCE. How are you doing, Bubbanaut?
Man, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. I woke up and showered for this podcast today.
Wow, that's more than any of the rest of us can say.
Yeah, looking back, I probably won't shower for every future podcast.
Ever again.
But I may shower immediately afterward, depending on how we cover these topics.
Just to cleanse yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have with me Trainzy TV. How are you doing, Trainzy?
Doing well. Drinking some tea. Kicking ass. Casting pods.
Yeah, you've casting your pods all over us right now. Yeah. It's impressive.
It's like it's just like pod racing, but with casts instead.
Yeah, I can see that. And we have with us Mike from Unmade Gaming. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. I showered also, but I showered in Trainzy's casted pods. So, I mean, I need another one after this. But
wow.
Yeah.
Need a top up.
I didn't clean those.
That's all right.
Okay.
It's all right. Okay, I'll do it for you. It's fine. One team, one fight. Something, right?
All right. So today we are talking about starting a new campaign and session zero. Now, this is a topic that we thought we'd start off with Roll for Podcast because it's so important and it really is the kind of first step in starting your D&D campaign. So I know, Mike, you are a bit of a buff when it comes to session zero. What are your kind of main, I guess, principles or kind of talking points when it comes to talking about session zeros?
Yeah, so when I do a session zero, I start by asking the players, what kind of game do you want to play? And then I set my expectations. Like, I don't want to have a game with X in it or Y in it or, you know, touchy topics that people don't like. I'm not comfortable with this. I'm not comfortable with that. That way, everyone at the table has an understanding of what kind of game it's going to be, what the themes are, what the darkest notes are, what the lightest notes are. That way, we're all comfortable with whatever we're doing.
Perhaps we should, in fact, define what is a session zero, because this might be a term which is like, what the fuck? It's just session one, dude. So, Bubs, what would you define session zero as in a nut piece?
Oh man, session zero in and of itself is probably all of the work that you do beforehand, defining the piece of work that you're attempting to go through, defining your player base, what your rule system is, any house rules that you explicitly need to use or inform your players of, making sure that all of your players are prepped. In this case, if you're playing online, they have access to the right software, they have access to Roll20 or whatever it is that they're using at the time. They're familiar with dice and what each dice can represent. That's what session zero means to me. It's the grander scale of things is making sure they understand that a D4 is for more than just a caltrop or a short sword or a dagger.
That's interesting. Because Mike, you were talking about setting these expectations. How do you do that? What does that mean, I suppose? If someone's new to a game, how do they know what they want or how do they know what to expect, I suppose?
I guess it comes down to more like what you expect in real life. So you take your real life things like, okay, I don't like this in real life. I don't want to role play in a fantasy game that has this thing. Like if that's one of those quote unquote triggers for you, you know, I don't want to have that effect on you by putting this negative thing in there if it's going to make you uncomfortable. So you have your real life things. And then everyone knows various media forms. Like you've seen Lord of the Rings or you've seen this TV show. So you kind of know what fantasy themes or what sci-fi themes you liked in a movie. So at least you can say, oh, I want a game that's like Lord of the Rings or I want a game that's like Final Fantasy. I'm like, okay, now I, as a DM, can take that and kind of do my best version of what I think that means.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so Trainzy, you're coming at us from the kind of player perspective, I suppose, a bit more, with myself, Mike, and Bubbanaut being fairly long-term dungeon masters. And you have DM'd yourself, but we see you more on the show as playing. When you're a player and you come to a session zero, what kind of things are you doing, I suppose? Or because as a dungeon master, it seems the onus is on us a lot of the time to kind of ask these questions. Is there anything you as a player try to do to help your dungeon master, or things that you're thinking to, I guess, help with that process?
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, I've hosted a couple session zeros without knowing, because it sounds like a Morpheus from the Matrix term that only exists amongst DMs. But what I personally look for as a player are ways in which I can be productively creative. So when I can just find the underlying theme and the feel of the party and what roles that they would like to go, I can then define my character and create a personality that suits the campaign, because you're not going to have, a religious zealot in some crazy cyborg D20 campaign.
Like, you, right, right.
You can, but you know, it'd be better suited for something that was a campaign that had overlapping connotations about a crusade or something. So I feel like as a player, it allows for both versatility and an opportunity to create a richer story from the get-go with the DM and community that you're role-playing with.
Yeah.
So that's where I differ from the way Bob was talking about his session zero. I do a session zero that is unique to the campaign, where it's less about introduction to playing roleplay and more about getting you into the world. And so mine is a lot more like what Trainzy was saying when I do a session zero, in that we'll come together, set our expectations, but primarily we build our characters together at the table and say, okay, here's what I'm going to play. How does this fit with what you're going to play? That's why you don't have that religious zealot in this cyberpunk universe. Or, you know, maybe we do have this religious zealot and he's against technology, and we have another guy who's super pro technology, and we're like, okay, are you guys cool with a conflict? Yes. And now we're breeding roleplay into the game,
right,
without
right.
them even understanding or knowing how to do that.
That's interesting, because I've done a similar thing in the past where we all create the characters and then we talk about how they each know each other, and how they feel about certain topics in the world. So I was playing a campaign which was primarily around a band of orcs and war against a group of orcs. And one of the questions I asked them was, like, first of all, how do you guys know each other? Do you want to have any tie-ins to one each other's backstories? And then how do you feel about orcs in general? One of them was playing a half-orc. How do they feel about that? And how do they feel about other factions in the world? Because that helps me know where to pitch the kind of quest at, I suppose. If they're like, we actually really love orcs, then I could implement a quest which is, maybe the orcs need some help. But if they're like, I fucking hate orcs, I'm never going to do anything other than kill them, then, you know, okay, let's send them over towards where, like, the humans are, where they're killing them. Because if you don't have that kind of knowledge about their players in a way, about their characters, sorry, in a way, you can kind of pitch it at a wrong level, you know, because players don't necessarily tell you, oh yeah, you know, secretly I have this deep hatred for orcs. And then you turn up on the day and you're like, the orcs need help. And they're like, I butcher the orcs. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, shit.
That also gives you plenty of room for, like, all DMs love homebrew, love world building. I have a world that I've been playing in for the last 4 years. And so my players that have been playing there for 4 years, they know all the basics. They know the ins and outs of what to expect in the world, but a new player doesn't. So now I have to break down how this world works outside of your normal view of fantasy. Like, my world is not Middle Earth, so I don't have the same rules and laws of magic and whatever in there. So I can, it gives, the session zero gives me a chance to bring it out to them and say, here's the world we're playing in. Here's what the religion's like. Here's what the tensions are like. That way they can feel grounded in that world.
Yeah.
I have a question then. Since you guys all sort of, I don't necessarily want to say pander, but since you handle it all in this method, you ask them what they would like to play and see how they can begin building together, sort of like Lego bricking the bunch. How do you handle when a player, let's say Ronald, wants to play a fighter?
Every time, not Ronald.
And then Greg also wants to play a fighter. And then Derek also wants to play a fighter. And then before you know it, you have five fighters in a group. And someone's like, well, we don't have a cleric. We have no heal bot. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be pigeonholed to just divine healing. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to like fit this group together. Like, how do you guys handle that?
That's interesting. Mike, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I actively don't. I purposefully don't. So I love when that stuff happens.
You evil.
I love when that stuff happens because now it forces, especially new players that don't understand, it forces you to have to think on your feet and be like, okay, we don't have a healer. How do we approach this combat now? Or, you know, we don't have a healer. We need to go to the store and spend a lot of our coin on healing potions. Or we need to find a minion that will heal us. Or, you know, we need to make good with the church and have them figure out a way to heal us. It helps breed role-playing. It helps breed strategy in combat. I hate when people walk into a combat like Final Fantasy and it's like, I hit the guy. Next turn, I hit the guy. I win. Right. I kind of want that strategy. If I put a chandelier in a room, it's because I want you to cut that rope and ride up that thing. So it breeds that strategic kind of four fighters. You know, you can have different flavors of fighter, and they're going to have different combat expertise, and they're going to have to work together in a unique way that a rogue, mage, cleric, and fighter wouldn't work together. So I kind of like that kind of stuff. It's new.
That's interesting because I probably come down on the other side of things where I suggest, especially to newer players and newer groups, that a set of roles would be better to have than just one role. Mainly the reason for that is just because they'll probably have more fun. If there are 10 fighters five fighters in a session, then everyone's good at fighting, but they're all good at the same thing. So when you try and set challenges for groups, which are, you know, there's a really tough door that you have to break down, and in the back of your head you're thinking, the fighter will be good at this. You've got 5 fighters who are good at this, so they're all going to jump to do it. Whereas if you've got a rogue in a party, you've got a fighter and a wizard, you can throw different sorts of challenges that are specifically for them. I do run games on Thursdays where I don't kind of organize which classes people play because it's just a drop-in session with viewers of the stream. And you do get some quite interesting combinations. We had a party of 5 bards once, and that was one of the most funny sessions we'd had, just because they'd all randomly picked that class. But when I'm running structured campaigns, especially a session 0, you try and figure out what the roles of the party are, I think.
Try to build a balance.
Yeah, a bit of a balance. But I guess there's more to a session 0 than just that. And I think, Bub, you were chatting about setting those rules. How important is it to teach them the rules in a session 0? And not only that, I guess, like, etiquette of play. Because that's a thing. If you're new to D&D, then etiquette is actually a topic which people aren't familiar with. And then people end up performing like douchebags because they don't necessarily know that what they're doing is considered wrong.
Sure. There are a lot of things. Like, you have to define immediately, are you playing in real life or are you playing on the computer? If you're playing like we do, which is primarily live on the internet, then you don't have things to worry about where someone is touching another person's dice and pencils come up missing and
phones.
Who the fuck ate my Cheetos and why are we on the phones?
Yeah.
And like stuff like that. That's not nothing you have to worry about anymore. Etiquette now, what is most important, establishing a certain set of rules that you expect your players to meet by, such as time arrival, making sure that they don't waste anybody else's time because it's just as important to the dungeon master as it is to other players. Making sure that they've handled any issues beforehand with microphones. The last thing you want to do is try to appear professional, and then you've got some guy that's like, he sounds like he's talking in a tin can, and it's just ruining that feel. Another thing is making sure that you give your colleagues or your co-players the floor, making sure they have time at the podium, and you're not that one guy that's just like, I'm gonna roll to see if I get, no, I fucking break down the door because I'm a big ass barbarian and that's my job. Like, you just stole his thunder. That's rude. Like, give him the floor, allow him to try to save you from a potential trap or things such as this. I generally teach a lot of people how to play D&D. This is where I find myself at in the tabletop world, so I have to teach people, like, what is a d4 for? What if they've, oh my goodness, if you showed someone a D24 or a D30, I think their minds would explode because they just can't fathom what those dice are for. But you have to teach them, like, you have to grassroots and go from the ground up, because a lot of these people, they're like, this is awesome. Like, how do I get started? Like, what do I do? Like,
yeah.
Do I just become like Bob the Fighter? Like, I get a big ass sword and, you know, I'm now Cloud. I have this enormous greatsword on my shoulder and I walk around and I beat the shit out of things. Yeah. There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
There is role play and there are relationship buildings and combat tactics. And there are so many different things that you can employ and you have to show them how to do it. You have to usher them. Like it's,
yeah.
It's a shepherd of the flock kind of thing.
Yeah. I think whenever you join a new group, whether you're new to D&D or it's just a new group of people that you're playing with, not only the rules and the etiquette of play are different, but the rating of the game becomes different. You know, is this PG? Is it family friendly? Or is this, you know, mature adult content? And that's something I always stress, particularly with long-term campaigns, with people. What are you comfortable with? What are you uncomfortable with? More importantly, I've had groups where people like, I don't really like graphic content when it comes to like beheadings and torture. Torture scenes tend to be, can be quite intense and uncomfortable for people. Sex is usually off books for my own games in terms of, you know, like, let's talk about where everything goes. You know, Fate to Black. And the other topic, which obviously goes with that, the topic that I avoid in every game personally, is the topic of rape, because it just gets incredibly uncomfortable for everyone at the table, particularly if you have women at the table. And that's something I think you need to talk about in a session zero, particularly if you've got groups of people from different ethnicities, different backgrounds, different genders. I know several of my friends got into an argument over in a game that there was slavery, people fell out over that, obviously, because it's a part of Dungeons and Dragons. It's a part of, you know, our history. And so that can become a topic that they didn't talk about beforehand, which they should have done, because feelings got hurt because, you know, people don't realize what's in character and what's out of character.
And the counter to that is not that you can't include it. Like, I have a homebrew world that it's been going on for, like I said, years, and there is rape and there is slavery in parts of the world. But even in parts of the world that it exists, we don't roleplay it because there's no need. It's an understood thing that, like, this group of people, they raid people and that's what they do. And most of the rest of the world views that as bad. So if you want to incorporate that in your backstory, that's a personal thing, but the chances of us talking about that or role-playing it are very rare, unless, like, you know, orcs did that and you have a hatred for orcs and now anytime you see an orc, you go into rage mode, which is totally fine. But we don't have to delve into your story. We're not going to do an aside where it's just you reliving horrible past moments, because that's not fun for anyone, really. So it's not that you can't include that stuff. It's just that, you know, you don't have to role-play it, which is...
We're all seasoned D&D players, but... Is there anything in particular that you guys do like to avoid in your own games out of interest, other than the topics that we've already covered?
Everything's basically on the table for me. I run a mature show. I definitely do. I'm not shy of cursing anytime. I feel like that's just part of my character. That's how I role play. There are aspects of sexual violence that can occur, and more along the lines, like, I like to scrape on moral ambiguity. I want my players to handle situations that would be tough for them to handle in the real world, because I want to see some of their characters shine. So you give them tough situations and allow them to shine, or you see what they're made of. You see that they're not capable of handling the tougher stuff, and that's when you let other people shine as well. So it's hard to deal with sometimes when a child dies, or when a matron is taken advantage of, or there's an orphanage on fire, something as simple and ridiculous as that. Like, these topics really define and build your characters. So I always touch on these topics because it's in our real world and it's part of our past. Why would I shy away from that in something that that I take so seriously?
Sure. Well, Tracy, Karen from the other side, plays devil's advocate here. What if a player comes to you and is specifically uncomfortable about such topics? Do you then include it anyway because you think it's part of the integrity of your game, or do you not include it because it's going to make them uncomfortable? Which is more important, do you think?
Well, I think the important thing is that we're all adults. We're all role-playing with adults, and, you know, on topics that are on the moral spectrum of society, a lot can be said that's implied, and there's a lot that can be done to safeguard individuals that are in the game themselves. So if you have people that are like, I need to role play this sexual assault thing, And if somebody's like, no, you don't, we can say, that's not cool, or, you know, just don't do it. Why?
Sure.
Why do we have to make exclusions for something that might be a negative variable on a undetermined amount of people that are either watching or participating? So the only time I really get uncomfortable in a campaign is when we have like a moral decision part, or we have something that happens to a specific gender or something, and they're like, you know, out of character, that bitch deserved it. And I'm like, ew.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so seedy and gross.
It's so seedy. And it's just like letting your bro colors like shine through during a campaign. And like, just leave your bro at home. Just please come to the table as an adult, a professional, and somebody who is willing to explore the options of creating awesome roleplay. So as like, that's my criteria amongst peers, and that's my criteria amongst players that I would be scouting for initially. And I think that is very much a grand part of Session Zero, especially when you guys go through so many different applicants, seeing if they fit that same bill and criteria and know what acceptable humor is without saying something so off the wall that you're like, I couldn't take you outside.
Yeah, I'm not here to hang out with Brad the bro. I'm here to hang out with Gorthak the orc warlock or whatever the hell it is. Like, we're here to play a game, not say lewd and lascivious things.
And I think that probably comes back to our etiquette as well as the rating of the game. You know, how much table speak is there, table talk, and how much is in character. And that's something you can set as well, because I know with some of our sessions on screen, you know, there's a lot of banter, there's a lot of chatter, and you can probably tell listening to the podcast that we all get along because there's so much kind of off-screen talk. We apologize to our editor. But, you know, in games in private that I run and I've played in, it's very intense, you know, you don't come out of character unless something actually happens in real life that you have to go to. And I've played, you know, 10, 12 hour sessions where you don't break character for any more than, you know, 20 minutes to go and get food because you're about to die. And all the other eating and drinking is in character. Go ahead, Mike. You look like you have a
point. Yeah, that's one of my hot button things. Is like the way I stream and the way I play on your channel, Will, is much the same as I play at home in my private games, where it's that very quote-unquote beer and pretzels kind of D&D or kind of tabletop game where we're a group of fans hanging out, playing a game. There's a lot of table talk. Well, there's not like a lot of table talk, especially not during like role-playing scenes, but like just like in some of your games, we crack some jokes or some funny bits. I hate silliness injected into a game just for the sake of silliness. Like, I don't want to play a silly game. I want to play a regular game, and then we're silly. Like, things just happen that are naturally funny. I don't want you to force things that you think are funny and then hope we catch on to your jokes, because then it feels cheap and forced, and it's like, oh, I see what you did. Anyway, let's just keep on rolling with that shitty joke you made. Yeah. So, like, for me, that, like even, like, the table talk isn't
pulling me out of character. You say my jokes are shitty, Mike?
Well, just you personally. Like, funniness and table talk doesn't pull me out of character, but stuff like that does. When it's like, here's an in-your-face joke, I'm like, it sure was. It sure was.
I'm waiting for him to complete that. You know, when I go over to your channel and laugh at your terrible jokes and then come back in mine and actually do some role-playing.
Yeah, I go to Will's channel and realize what not to do, and then I come back.
When I see you with your shitty beer and your shitty pretzels and your shitty jokes.
I'm like, oh God, the English, and then I come back to my channel where it's
your
safe.
Your sophisticated high humor channel.
No, but I've played in games where like I've watched people actually like try to put in, okay, this is an outside joke that we have. Let me put this outside joke in game. And I'm like, how is that's not even appropriate. Like, it doesn't fit here in the fantasy world. Like, it's completely out of any kind of reality to where it is. So those kind of things pull me out.
Sorry. Even if I get that joke, I don't appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess other things that are important when it comes to a session zero, just like the very basics, I think Bob kind of touched on these. What rules are we playing? Because, you know, addition is a thing. You know, we're playing fourth, we're playing third, we're playing fifth. When and where do we play? How long for? I think that's one of the kind of principles of it, or like, what's a better word for it? Like pillars of it, I suppose. Because when do we play and how long for is vital, especially if you're playing in an in-game session, where how do people get there and et cetera, et cetera. Because I think we've all played games where that wasn't necessarily set. Like we play every day or every Wednesday at this time of the month, you know, and then people don't show up. People, you know, the game falls through just because there's no kind of like structure set on there. Even if it's something that's like, we're going to try and play once a month at this time vaguely, and then nearer the time, you know, you get things together. How important is that to communicate to people, do you think, Bubs, when we play and how long for? And how strict are you with people when it comes to that kind of session zeros?
As far as the session zero goes, it's kind of hit or miss. I try to tell people like, hey, we're gonna meet at this time to begin building characters, explaining the rules of the game so you can get a grander idea of it, and then you can go about your day. If you have something else that you have to do, then so on and so forth. But we're going to start playing at this time, starting next week of this day, and it's important for you to be there because you really don't want to miss the first session. And that is typically pretty well conveyed, and most people can understand that. But sometimes I will have players that will, they'll squander their time, or they'll show up late, or they're like, yeah, I got to dip early. And I tell them like, hey man, there are a lot of people that want to be playing in this game right now.
Yeah.
I selected you out of a lot because you showed interest, you showed desire, and I thought you would fit well with this particular group. Please don't waste my time. Please don't waste your time. Decide right now whether or not you're going to play in the future and you're going to make the schedule. If not, no hard feelings. I would much rather get someone in here that would better suit the time frame and the group.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not only your time and their own time that they're wasting. It's everyone else's time, right? You know, because if people are wanting to adventure with Grognak the Barbarian, then when Grognak's there, you know, it sucks because you want to be playing with your friends. But I guess moving deeper into where we were talking about people fitting into the world itself, once we have these kind of baselines set, how do you fit players into not only the world, but the rest of the party? Because that's a really important one. You know, you can end up with three lawful good guys, and then you've got one chaotic evil, and you know immediately the paladins are going to turn on this guy and slaughter him. How do you kind of prevent that from happening? Because I've certainly played a session before where we didn't session zero well enough, and a guy shows up with a completely evil character. It's like, dude, you're just going to get killed. Like, this isn't going to work. Trinity, when you're creating a character for a game as a player, how do you kind of stop yourself or make yourself into the group? Because I know you mentioned this slightly before.
In terms of my personality or?
I guess your character, you know, not you yourself as a person, because we're presuming that everyone showing up to a session zero isn't a dick. Obviously, you're an exception. But like the character, you know, if everyone else is going to be playing lawful, how do you, even if you want to play something slightly different, fit yourself into a party?
Well, it's not that I come with like flexible morality. I come with the, I don't know. It's more of a, I assume it's a role played wisdom that my character inherently has that other people in the world do not share the same moral compass that I would, you know, as my character is in this adventure. So
yeah,
like Nobias, the last one that I developed, I've never played Lawful Good. And I know notoriously everything that we've ever played on Thursday is chaotic evil. There's no neutral, there's no anything else. It all just devolves to chaotic evil because that's the style of DM, that's the style of players we have. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what can we interact with and what is like randomly evil and how can we like start mass genocide immediately and then move on to the next thing? So I came into the session knowing this. So I had to explore the options. How do I perform lawfully good in a group that is like as a majority is evil? And that has very much to do with keeping, I guess when it comes to my the focus of my character, keeping with the script, keeping with what their choices would be, and honoring the adventure as if it was a mercenary quest. So it's like, no bias, I'm gonna send you with this scoundrel, this fiend, all these other people, and you need to go pick up this horse. And on the way, they're like, oh, we're gonna kill X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I wouldn't have done that, but we're going to get right. the horse, you know. And it could be a moral confliction. I may say something, but it's not gonna be like, you killed that horse. I just viscerally disagree, and we're going to
because fisticuffs.
It doesn't add to be that aggressive, you know.
Right. Yeah. I think that's something that's quite important, actually, because if you're playing a game with other people, I found ways in character not to come to blows with others, you know, rather than like, I immediately draw my sword, you know, and slash at the guy. You know, there's lots of ways that you can have arguments and disagreements with people and not end up, you know, murdering one another. You just have to be a little bit more diplomatic about it, I suppose. But I guess, Mike, from the DM's perspective, how kind of strict are you in like limiting alignments and stuff like that? Because if someone comes to you saying, I'm going to be playing chaotic evil and everyone else you know is playing lawful good or something vaguely good, is that something that you'd shut down and say, no, you can't do this?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I am very strict in the sense that I hate alignments. So for my personal games, first of all, I don't play evil campaigns because I don't find them fun. I don't DM them, so I don't find them fun. So like, I just eliminate that entirely. It's an adventure about heroes. Heroes are not the bad guy. If I wanted to run an adventure about villains, it's a whole different game. So rule number one of my house rules is the players are heroes. So that doesn't mean you're all lawful good paladins. In fact, I don't like alignment, so I strip it from the rules entirely. But everyone has moral ambiguity. Like, as a person, I can't tie myself to one of the 9 D&D alignments. On a given day, it could be any different number of things.
Oh, we're gonna have an alignment episode. Yeah,
I bet that's it's worth its own thing. But like on a given day, I fluctuate between all 9 of them at any hour of the day. So to tie an entire, you know, molded character into one of these 9 boxes, it seems unrealistic to me. So I restrict it in the sense that there is none. You just can't be evil. Like, you can't just have wanton destruction. We're on a quest. Like, when I first started playing D&D, that's where I learned this. We had a campaign where we were all in agreement that we're going to go save the whatever. And there was one guy who was just chaotic evil for the sense to be chaotic evil. And he was just chaotic stupid. He would just do things that were against the party. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go punch that civilian over there. I'm like, but why? What does that do? Is it because of chaotic evil? Like, that doesn't do anything. It doesn't further any role-playing. It doesn't foster any relationships. You're just an asshole. Like, you're chaotic dumbass. Like, I don't want to play
with
you.
Yeah. I hear that as well, because you know, we've all played in campaigns where that kind of thing happens. I think evil is often, not only for the player side, but for the Dungeon Master side, played off as stupid, you know, like, into my evil lair. Like, why are you telling me where you are and your master plan, you James Bond villain? You're an idiot, you know. If you're truly evil, you kind of mask it. And I think that's, you know, true evil does tend to mask itself. So particularly for newer players and people new to the session that I'm not familiar with, I tend to restrict, you know, stuff like complete evil and completely radical characters. However, the one kind of caveat I'd have to that is if the player is someone really experienced that I've played with for a long time that I know can pull it off. So if I come to the session 0 and I'm like, this guy, you know, he's a great DM or he's a great player, I reckon he could probably pull it off. And I've seen it done well where the guy was evil. I actually played the campaign with a guy who was playing an evil character, but he actually pretended to be a good character and he only ended up performing evil acts away from the party or in secret, which led to a cool dynamic of the party like becoming suspicious of him and trying to follow him. And he'd have to kind of find out more and more excuses. And it became a cool part of the campaign. But yeah, for general and especially new players, I tend to avoid that because I guess you can be a bit more gung-ho when you're a beginner.
That's one of those things that it's like, again, if done well, it can be nice. However, the majority of the time, it's not done well, at least from what I've seen. Like, even if you take the samurai game that I play on your channel, if you were to pigeonhole my character, he's clearly lawful evil. Like, there's no question about it. He kills people all the time. And he's playing in a campaign with a lawful good paladin. And they're working together because they're both agreed that the end goal of the campaign is something they both want. So they want it for different reasons. They want to get it in different ways, but they're forced to work together. And because we're experienced role players, we can make that happen. So I think it's perfectly essential, especially for new players or even people new to your world and not really sure how quote unquote alignments work in your world, that it's perfectly acceptable to restrict that. And that is something that would come out in session zero. So, you know, these are the alignments that you can play. You know, this is the spectrum of alignments. You know, this is how you'll be received in this world.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The only other topic I wanted to touch on already for session zero, unless we have any other points that people want to bring up, is just the reason for people to adventure together, because that is the exact point you're talking about then. Like, your characters are working together because they see this end goal being as valuable. Bubblenaut, how important is it for you guys at session zero to come up with a reason that you guys are journeying or adventuring together in a group, would you say?
Establishing bonds is very important. Yeah. Giving them a definitive reason for why they are traveling together is important, but each of them may have a variety of reasons.
Right.
Maybe they're pursuing a significant other, a potential relationship with another player, or they're trying to take advantage of the coin purse of another player, or they're just doing it for their deity. Or maybe their king has requested them to do that, but they find the unity in each other, at least for the basest of reasons of protection. They know that they can't accomplish this alone, whatever it is, so they rely on each other one way or another. For one reason or yet another, they need each other. And when you build that implicit need, that's the foundation for groups as a whole, in my personal opinion. They need each other. Not that they just want to be around, because... Yeah. Well, they don't always want to be around each other. There's always going to be disagreements. There's always going to be problems, but they need to be around each other in order to succeed.
Yeah, and that's part of the, I guess, collaborative storytelling element of Dungeons & Dragons. You guys, at the end of the day, you guys do have to work together because we're playing a game in person together. And so if your characters can't find a reason to be with one another and we can't figure out something which is going to work, then, you know, the game itself can't actually be performed. Yeah, so I think that's kind of session zero in a nutshell. I think we've gone into a fair amount of detail. Is there anything that we've kind of missed that people wanted to bring up, points as that they see as important?
There's one tool I want to give a shout out to that I recently found out about, probably about 2 years ago. And this is great for players. This is great for players. This is great for DMs. If you're a player and your DM doesn't request this, it's great for you to use as character structure. And once you give this to your DM, they'll start requesting it. But you can Google it. It's called the 10-minute character backstory. And it's 5 steps that basically say, you know, okay, give me, you know, 5 descriptive features of your character. These could be emotional tells, physical descriptions, whatever. Then it says, you know, make me a friendly NPC, make me a unfriendly NPC. So now I have a conflict in your backstory and stuff like that. And so this basically boils down to like, so if you write me a 10-page backstory, I'm going to read it because I love that kind of stuff. But this is the cliff notes. This is the outline of your character. And with the outline alone, I can further incorporate you in the world. Okay, you're a paladin from some order. Now I have to make the order and make the order part of the world and make you feel incorporated. You know, you're on a quest for this, or you don't like this. So now I have some of the conflicts that you want to have in your life. And I can take all 4 of my characters' backstories and look at them and be like, okay, how can I make these guys work together? How can I, you know, foster relationship or foster conflict between them? What draws these characters to adventure? And now I have this outline, these building blocks of characters that I can use to make the building blocks of the campaign we're going to play. And I think the 10-minute backstory is a misleading title. It definitely takes more than 10 minutes if anyone's ever made a character, but it is a great device to use to intro into any campaign, even if it's a world you've played in before or never played in at all.
Awesome. Any other points that we wanted to bring up?
I think alignment as it pertains to session zero is... It has everything to do with the player, because anybody can be like a chaotic douchebag, But if you can pull, you can pull off any alignment given your ability to role play. And then as it pertains to a party and their origin and what brings them together, I think that's also another indication of the experience level of the party itself and how well they can actually either improv or own up to the conjoined story that they're together versus operating in the cliche, oh, well, you know, somebody sent me this letter, so hi, I'm Chuck. Nice to meet you.
Right, yeah.
That actually reminds me of something Bub said earlier, that he, you know, you introduce a lot of people to the game, so you have to break down, you know, what is a D4, what is a D6, et cetera. I think one of my main philosophies is basically what Trainzy said. Anytime I bring a new person into tabletop, I consider it tabletop. And the one core characteristic between all tabletop gamings, no matter what their crunchy rule sets are, is role-playing. So yeah. I guess if I could instill one piece of information to new DMs or to new players or even old DMs and old players, don't worry about the crunch, worry about the role play. Because if you can role play, yeah, you can role play in any setting. I think I've played in several new systems playing on Encounter Roleplay, and I've never played in them before, but because I can role play, I have a strong role play background from other stuff, I can easily assimilate into those and then just learn the rules as I go. So whenever I have a new player, I say, tell me what you want to do, how you want to do it, and I will tell you what to roll. So you don't have to worry about the crunch, you don't have to worry about the mechanics, let me figure that out for you until you're comfortable in acting out and, you know, experiencing the world.
I feel like that's something that it's not necessarily utilized well by new players, though, from my personal experience. A lot of them feel this inherent stigma with the initial role play. Unless they are vaudevillian or they have come out of some kind of acting class, I've even dealt with people that do that regularly. They act because they enjoy to.
Yeah.
But the idea of portraying a character is so, it's like taboo to them. And they're afraid. Like, they're afraid to act out these characters. So I feel like when you hit the ground running, mechanics are the most important. Because once you start building their confidence in the mechanics themselves, mm-hmm, such as, like, okay, you make an attack. And then they begin looking at their character sheet. And like, where,
yeah,
like if they're not confident in rolling themselves, like rolling just a common attack, I don't think they're going to feel exceedingly confident in role playing. So I feel like that's the dungeon master's job to show them that it's okay. Like you really got to put on your man pants and be like,
yeah,
you got to get in there and act. You have to act out every NPC and tell them like, hey, this is okay. It's okay to sound a little silly, you know, break out the town fool, break out the high guard, you show them what you're capable of. And when they start doubting themselves, that's when you rip them a little, like, hey, come on, man, give it a try. We're all playing a game here.
Yep.
We're not going to laugh at you. This is what we're here for.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's important. Like, mechanically driven, everybody knows that these games are written with the rule books. So the mechanics can drive more or less the combat, because without the combat, it's just role playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's role playing and a handful of skills at best, but I'm all about the role playing. I think combat is kind of boring personally. I feel like my split is 70% role play, 30% combat, but I make my combat super memorable. It has to be memorable. It's like, I stab a goblin. Well, congratulations, you killed a goblin. No, I want something that's epic. That I'm not looking for the mundanity of it all. I want the role play. I want the character building. I want to foster brilliant minds and make something happen in the role play world. So I feel like mechanically driven, you have to get that right out of the gate. So that's very much a session zero. And that's something that you work on, from my personal experience, from session zero to about session six or seven, before they can finally start rolling into their character and beginning to, like, you know, get the feel of who they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Absolutely. All right, so that's session zero, folks. If you have any questions about what we've been talking about, you can email into podcast@encounterroleplay.com, or you can tweet to me @EncounterRP on Twitter if you have any thoughts, feelings, emotions about what we've talked about at session zero. However, we do have some listener questions. Now, in the future, you guys will be able to email into podcast@encounterroleplay.com once again to have these questions asked. And occasionally we'll be polling questions on Twitter as well. But we got some in last night, actually, to see what you guys had in mind as to some listener questions. These are mostly surrounding beginner advice. And so I have a question in from Dormal. He says, long-time D&D player, cut off from the group since the end of 4th edition, how hard will it be to pick things up, and what are the major differences? I'm not sure how much you guys have played 4E, but...
I'm not.
Not at all?
No, I've not. I've sat into a single session, and I was widely unimpressed with the group, and it has stained 4th edition in my mind.
So I played 4th edition almost exclusively for like 2 years. The leap from 4th edition to 5th edition is vast. However, if you're a long-time D&D player, the leap from 3 and 3.5 to 5th edition is a very short hop, if anything. A lot of the mechanics are the same. A lot of the good features from... a lot of the more cinematic features, let me say, from 4th edition were carried over. Like, you have similar actions. Like, it's more action-based for the combat, as opposed to you're a fighter and your only option is to hit a guy, and then next turn hit a guy, and then next turn hit a guy. There actually gives you things you can do. So it does incorporate over those things where you don't have to be a wizard to be the coolest guy in the party. But yeah, it's really easy to make that transition from 4th to 5th or from 3.5 to 5th. You just get jump back in there.
Yeah. I've always said that 3.5... and 4th equal 5 in a way. That obviously the maths doesn't stack up, but the feel of the game certainly does. But I'm going to come at this question from a slightly different angle. Just in general, for long time D&D players coming from older editions, let's go like 2nd AD&D, who knows, and they want to play in 5th edition again because the new books are out, people are playing it. And this is something I experienced at Games Fest. I played with some older gentlemen who had said they'd been playing since the very first, you know, white box that came out, red box stuff was out, and they had no idea what 5th edition was, but they wanted to play it. And of course, when you're at a con, you're like, oh shit, what do I do? You know, let's just try our best not to like fuck everything up and ruin their experience of it. But if you are in that, you know, a group of people that are joining back in, I guess the one thing, or the one kind of principle I take with me would be to come at it with an open mind, because it's incredibly easy to hate other editions. It's incredibly easy to cast editions and books aside and say, these are rubbish, never going to play them, you know, without having given them a try. Sure, if you give it a try, then you have every right to say that it's absolute crap, you know. I'm personally not a fan of 3.5, but I've played it, so I can say that, you know. If I hadn't played it, then there's no way you can say that you don't like something.
Right.
So going into it with that kind of open mind where this will be fun, you know, or this could be fun, is such a better way to come at it, a better mentality than, God, this is gonna suck. Because if you come into something thinking that something's gonna be rubbish, inevitably it's a self-fulfilling prophecy and you're not gonna have a good time because you've come at it with a kind of like grumpy attitude. But if you're like, this could be fun, you know, then I think that's how you get the most enjoyment out of it. So that would be my kind of advice for coming from older editions and rejoining back into 5th, because there are going to be some things that you don't like. There are going to be some things that you do like. You kind of have to live with all of it, just as we all do when it comes to editions. We're going to race through these questions. So what is it like to DM? I have never DM'd, Blackwing asks. Trainzy, why don't you take this one? Because you have DM'd a bit.
Me, take the sheer prep of creating a character and trying to be, you know, something that is unique that fits you, and then write a world for people instead. So you take that one character. You have this backstory, and then you have to create this elaborate world that would surround that one character, and then upwards of 4 or 5, 6 others. So for me, it was very much about creating a dynamic. I'm tired right now. Sorry.
Just a dynamic. You were trying to create a dynamic.
Yeah. Things that people can interact with and that fits. Well, my experience was with Stars D20, so it's a little different. But interesting scenarios with NPCs that carry their own personalities. So to be a DM, you have to be like a super PC because you're running all of these other PCs, you're running these NPCs, and I feel like one of the biggest testaments to really awesome DMs is how well they can roleplay through an NPC to create an experience for the players where they feel that they're actually interacting with, you know, other experienced players in addition to their party.
Yeah.
So, aside from keeping a very fresh plot that's going somewhere, allows for a certain amount of mystery, puzzle solving, it's a lot of work, and it requires an incredible amount of prep. But the reward and the ability to showcase your skills and develop skills that you never knew you had is on the other side of it. And you need only practice and you know, write and find a group that is willing to practice with you and see if you've got this stuff, because it's not for everyone.
Absolutely not. No, it's to be in the driving seat, I suppose, isn't it? It's to be the alpha and the omega. It's to, I guess, be the most responsible person in the group, and to be a leader in a way. You know, most Dungeon Masters are leaders of their groups to some degree. And it's a very different role. And it's one I think everyone should experience at least once, even if they don't like it, because some people don't like DMing. But most people that have DM'd at least once, and I've convinced them to, you know, go on, do it once, are now long-term DMs as well and have been doing it ever since because they really enjoy it. And so it's a lot of fun, first of all. You know,
it is incredibly.
It's the most fun I find out of playing Dungeons & Dragons is to be a DM. But like Trinity said, it's a lot of work and a lot of responsibility as well, and a lot of stress because you're the one that's responsible for getting people to places, getting people in whatever location you're playing at a certain time. You're an organizer. You're an events manager in a way, I suppose. So there's a lot of things that go into it, just what the experience feels like, I suppose.
Yeah, my buddy has a 5-year-old son, and he says all the time, whether it's he does something good or he does something awful, having a child is one of the greatest feelings in the world and one of the most stressful times in your life. And that's essentially how I look at dungeon mastering. Because when you first get in, you're going to over-prep or you're going to under-prep, and either way, your players are going to do the opposite of what you expected them to do. And you're new to improv, so now you have to improv and come up with things on the fly. And then next time you try to either under-prep since you over-prepped last time or over-prep since you under-prepped last time, and they still do the opposite thing. And you're like, why won't you just do what I want you to do? Because it's 5 or 4 individual people trying to do their own thing. So you kind of have to weave a story around whatever nonsensical moments they're having and make it coherent, which can be a daunting task. But like you said, Will, should everyone try it? Absolutely. Is it for everyone? Absolutely not. But you should definitely go out there and try it, because again, how will you know if you don't jump in there and give it a shot?
Right.
I can wrap it up. I can wrap that up.
Put a bow on it.
Very simply.
Put a bow right on it.
It's great. It's what is it like to DM? I've never DM'd. It's great that everybody has a story that is just waiting to be told. So just jump in the pilot seat and fly, man. It's that easy. Don't worry about the hangups of the mechanics. That'll come along. But every story desires to be told. So get behind it and do it, because DMing is the most fun that I've ever had with D&D. And I've been playing for a long time. Long time.
Absolutely, yeah. How do you then, the question in from AA_Zaness, who could that be? Perhaps from the All-Star Podcast, Adventures Anonymous. he asks, how do you balance the party's happiness with your own happiness as a DM? That's a good question.
I say this all the time. All the time. People ask, how do I balance the party's happiness with my own happiness? And for the longest time, I tried to build encounters and develop excitement based off of what I thought would be enjoyable for my party, what I thought my players would enjoy. And then that just got so taxing because I stopped having fun. I stopped having fun. Now, I don't want to be that pompous guy that just says, well, like, my fun equals their fun. But when it comes to D&D, if I'm not having fun, I sure as hell know my players aren't having fun.
Right.
So first and foremost, I make sure I'm having a good time and I'm laughing, because if I'm not, my players aren't either. And if they have a problem, then I can address that problem and begin weaving in something to make sure they're happy as well.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Mike, how do you feel
about that? Yes, yeah, I'm much the same way, I guess. It's to me, it's not an individual. It's not their happiness versus my happiness. It's a team sport. D&D is a team game, and we are a team, so it's the team's happiness. You know, if I'm having a shitty day, that's fine. As a whole, we're on the up and up here. So it's very important as a DM to be aware of that and like check in with yourself. Hey, am I actually having fun? No. Okay, what am I doing? What can I do to better that? Or find one player. Hey, John, are you look a little off today. You don't seem your normal self. You know, you're not digging this session. You know, you're having a stressful day. Is this just like a you thing? Am I messing up here? And just check in with your players and find out, hey, why are you in a funk? Is it you or is it me? And then fix it. Like, that's it. It's a team happiness. It's not an individual-based thing. Together, you guys make up the D&D group. And as long as you're having fun, that's what I've always said, is as long as you're having fun, you're playing D&D right.
Absolutely. I think you guys nailed it on that one. And so I guess the last question that we'll take will be from Mumfrey999. I want to blog about how to start in RPGs. Can you give me any advice? I guess, first of all, listen to this wonderful podcast, Roll for Podcast. I've heard it's really great. Give some good advice. Bob, you've had a bit of experience blogging in D&D, right?
I'm just blogging in general. And the one key thing, man, as far as advice goes when it comes to blogging, is make sure you have a passion about it. If you have no passion for what it is that you want to write about, it's not going to be interesting. And I hate to be honest, but nobody's going to want to read it if it's just blasé. Yeah. So make sure it's something that you're passionate about and it's something that you have a lot of knowledge of. If you are lacking in the knowledge, just start doing your homework. You know, do some groundwork, hit the ground running, find some information for yourself, and make sure you're passionate, and then just write. Let your fingertips do the hard work, and that's it. That's blogging in a nutshell.
Yeah, so I've never blogged before, but, you know, between talking to a lot of people that do podcasts, Will, doing Twitch with all these guys, it's one of those things where, like, make sure you're doing it for the right reason. Are you blogging because you want to be a famous blogger? If so, you probably don't need a blog. If you're blogging because you have something to say and you're really excited about a topic and you're passionate, like Bub just said, then blog away. But don't blog with the expectation that you're going to be the next famous D&D blog. That's probably not the best way to blog. Blog because you have something you want to put out there. You have an opinion. And if people read it, great. If people don't read it, still keep blogging because you still have opinions that you want out there. So, just definitely make sure you're doing it for the right reason.
Yeah, I think one of the parameters I set, like, would I still be doing this if no one was really watching or if it wasn't your job? Then if so, then just set, you know, if you're going to do it anyway and you really want to do it, then keep on trucking and then rest will come with it. And it's just a time thing as well. You can't expect things to blow up overnight. I mean, it's crazy joke, like, we're the war of attrition streamers because we just stream all the time. And that's why anyone watches, because you're just streaming all the fucking time. You spend all your life doing it. if you're doing the same thing with pretty much anything in life, I'd suggest, you know, any project that you want to do, especially on the internet, everything comes, you just got to work hard for it.
Yep.
And the harder you work, the quicker success will find you. And on that, enlightening, if I do say so myself, then I guess we should probably do some wrap-ups for today's Roll for Podcast episode 1. Now, if you did enjoy the podcast and what we had to say, then if you could please leave a 5-star review on the iTunes, that would be awesome. It helps people find our podcast, helps people listen, gets the word of Roll for Podcast out there. And of course, we all have our own projects, each one of us, our Twitch streamers that stream Dungeons & Dragons or other things in the case of some of us. In fact, all of us. No, except from me. Oh, shit. So, sometimes I play other things. I promise. But yes, you can find us all in different places on the internet. We'll go around and do some hooks and plugs. So myself, my name is Will. I'm from Encounter Roleplay. You can find me on twitch.tv/EncounterRoleplay. You can email in podcasts@EncounterRoleplay.com. Twitter is @EncounterRP. I've got EncounterRoleplay.com for a D&D advice website. And pretty much Encounter Roleplay, type it in. You'll probably find various forms of social media on the internet in which I exist. Bonaut, where could we find you, my friend?
Most of the time you guys can find me on Twitch. That would be twitch.tv bubbernaut_CCE, formerly of Crit Confirm Entertainment. And I'm also on Twitter. You guys can locate me on Twitter as the Bubbernaut. And that's the best place to find me, guys.
Same questions for you, Trainzy TV.
I'm a full-time caster on Twitch, 6 days a week, about 9 hours a day. One of them attrition speak streamers, like we'll say. But you can also find me on Twitter at TrainzyTV or Instagram at TrainzyTV as well.
Absolutely. And Mike from Unmade Gaming, where can we find you?
Primarily on Twitch, as everyone said, twitch.tv/unmadegaming. Also Facebook, YouTube, GameWisp, and...
Live Jasmine,
as well as Twitter, Unmade Gaming. You can find us all there. All of my blog posts go on our GameWisp page, and all of my random nonsensical ramblings go on Twitter. So feel free to hit up any of those places.
Awesome. Thank you so much for listening to Roll for Podcasts. This month's installment was on Session Zero, but next month's will be on, once you have these player expectations set in your Session Zero, how do you then implement them into your game and your campaign? We're going to be talking about a bunch of topics. And if you want your listeners' questions to be answered, then all you have to do is send in an email to podcast@encounterroleplay.com or tweet at myself at EncounterRP or at the Bubbernaut or at TrainzyTV or at Unmade Gaming, and we'll put them into one conglomerate pool of questions from which we will dip our naked bodies into. That's not a promise, but it is sultry. So thank you for listening, guys, and we'll see you guys next month. Goodbye. All right. There's no particular intro I need to do for fucking... You just rolled a critical hit. Welcome to Roll for Podcast.
Can you please like leave that in? Like whatever you do, I will message Neil. Leave that in. That's amazing.
What? Are we doing that now? Are we all?
I think that's the whole podcast, man. That's it right there. That's it.
You just rolled a critical hit.
Welcome to Roll for Podcast. Oh man, that's amazing.
Please your ear holes.
Right, I'm with
our massive audio files.
I'm gonna leave the podcast.
Are you glad you woke up for this, Bub?
Bub, you showered for this.
I showered for this. Yeah,
for the video version of the audio podcast.
Oh, yeah. And you'll shower again, my friend. You'll shower again.
Oh man.
Oh man. Shower your ear holes with our huge audio files. God damn it. We'll bring us in.
Alright, yeah, alright. So sorry. Okay. Hello everybody and welcome to Roll for Podcast, our Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition talk show podcast in which we talk about D&D things for your pleasure. Is that good? Is that
good? The pleasuring your ear holes.
Is that good?
I mean, that's pretty good. I'm okay with this.
Is our podcast ribbed?
It certainly can be.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right. I'll try again. I'll just keep spitballing.
That was perfect. But I do request that we put bloopers at the end after questions.
The blooper episode of Christmas. Okay.
Oh,
so with me today, I have a wonderful cast joining me on Roll for Podcast to chat with me about these topics. Of course, I should probably introduce myself, shouldn't I? Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. Did you forget who you were?
I forgot my name.
It's like I paid for the whole seat, man, but I'm only using the edge of it right now. What's his name?
Who am I? Guys, at least half of us are professional streamers.
Oh, like, no. Okay.